Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world. Today, we are joined by Venezuelan football commentator Geraldine Carrascaro, fast becoming a reference point across South America for her commentary on Copa Libertadores and Sudamericana games for global network ESPN. Geraldine, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm fine, mate. Thank you for inviting me, Jordan. I have been always waiting for this moment to know you, to have this conversation with you. I don't know if so many people have told you, ¿qué haces, muchacho, viendo el fútbol de Venezuela? You understand?
Many people ask me that all the time. And I've been on podcasts as a guest to talk about it. So I actually like being this side of the fence where I'm asking the question because for me, you know, it's far more interesting, the stories that you have and people in Venezuelan football have than, you know, my interest in Venezuelan football. For those of you that don't know, it began with me writing the book. And the reason why I wrote the book is because I had an interest in Venezuela as a country, first and foremost, since about 2012, because my wife went to school with a girl from Venezuela, an international boarding school in England. They were best friends. And my wife got, who's completely English, by the way, my wife got interested in like the music and the food of Venezuela through her friend. And then when we got together, when she was playing Venezuelan music in the house and cooking me arepas and things like this, that sparked my interest in Venezuela.
Do you like arepas?
I love arepas. Reina Pepiada is my favorite. I'm not like, apparently this is like a crime, but I'm not too keen on cachapas, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I do like arepas and I love tequeños.
Okay, I have arepas today for breakfast, so.
What did you have?
Arepa with ham and cheese, normal one.
It's my daughter's favorite food, so she's already more Venezuelan than I'll ever be. Like she's here from an early age. You know, her first language, honestly, is Spanish. She's better at Spanish than English. So, you know, hopefully in 15 years' time, you might be commentating on one of her games with her playing for the Vino Tinto. That's a father's dream for my daughter.
Yeah, that would be nice. So I want to thank you for all the things you are doing in Venezuela for our football, for promote our league and our players. So I'm going to take this opportunity to say thank you, Jordan, because your work is very important for us.
No, thank you very much. And it's really interesting that I'm sat here in Caracas as an English guy and I'm interviewing a Venezuelan in Argentina who's becoming known across the continent for exactly that, promoting Venezuelan football indirectly through your commentary of games, which although I only, to be honest with you, understand about 60%, I already know that, and no disrespect to any other commentators, I already know how valuable it is to have a Venezuelan voice on Venezuelan games, because more so when I listen to English commentary of Copa Libertadores and Sudamericana, there's so many simple mistakes or lack of information that hamper the commentary, the enjoyment of the commentary. And it's the research and the background and the context that you can give your commentary that for me makes it really enjoyable. Just little things, for example, when I've listened to English commentary of Deportivo La Guaira games, obviously they play in El Olimpico in Caracas, and I've listened to English language commentators tell me, we're here in the city of La Guaira. If you look over the stand, you can see the mountains of La Guaira. And I'm just like,
yeah,
what? how difficult was it to make that initial breakthrough? Because I know it's a stereotype, but it's there for a good reason. It's hard for female commentators to break through in across the world, but perhaps even harder in South America. Yet you've made, since moving to Argentina, quite a quick ascendancy to already covering major finals and being respected across the continent.
Now, it was difficult at the beginning. I came here without a job offer, you know. I was working in Venezuela since 2012 with personal projects, Mundo Pelota, Radio, Mundo Pelota, like a website, Mundo Pelota, like my degree thesis, you know. Then I started to commentate Zulia Football Club matches in radio, like in 2013. Then I work with a group of colleagues in the Under 17 World Cup that Venezuela participated with Dudamel as a head coach. I don't know if you remember. And yes, I worked there like a color commentator. So I started building my path in this way. Then I started to have opportunities in TV, national TV, Meridiano with futsal and football. Then in Gol TV with the Zulia matches, Teletuya and all that TV channels that still is working, are working with Venezuelan football. But beside that, or apart from that, I did so many things. I had so many jobs. I was in a newspaper, I was in a magazine, all the things that you can imagine as a journalist, I could do it. And my final job or my final role in Venezuela was a mass communication, like manager communication of Zulia Football Club, you know, like jefe de prensa. Like jefe de prensa. Yeah, press office. So that was my final job. Then I decided to go abroad to open my path, to grow as a professional, to challenge myself, you know, and with that experience, vast experience, plenty of experiences, I thought I was going to be able to do it. At the beginning, it wasn't easy because I had other jobs, not related with football, not related with journalism. And then I got my opportunity to work as an announcer in the Youth Olympic Games, Buenos Aires 2018. And then I met people that in few months contact me back and told me, hey, there is a casting in ESPN, you want to do it? And I said, of course, that is my dream for life. So I went to this casting and I did really well. But before that, I worked in Media Pro in a similar way to breakthrough. Always you have to go to participate in casting and to prove yourself, your skills, your knowledge, how you do it in the moment, you know? So more or less, that's the story. Of course, I prepared myself a lot. I mean, I love football since I was 7 years old. I have football in my head, like breathing. So it comes natural for me working football or commentate football is my passion, it's my true passion for life. So it's not like it's easy, but it's like breathing for me working football. So now I'm very happy to do this, to represent my country. I receive so many messages that people say, you make us feel proud that you are Venezuelan. So that for me is like priceless.
Yeah, and I see it a lot on Twitter, be it because you've responded to the message, so I see it through your timeline, or it's people I follow tweeting you to say thank you. But it's very present. And even Carlos Dominguez, who is probably fair to say is the most prominent Liga Footbay commentator in this moment,
Number one.
Yeah, openly like looks up and admires you. Like he wrote an article in El Estimulo which was, you know, gushing in its praise of you, and very much so. And three questions that I wanted to ask off the back of that answer you just gave. A very thorough, interesting answer, but three things stood out for me. Firstly, like you said, you're from Zulia, and when yes. I was reading about, you know, your story, you played for the futsal team to begin with, and was a national champion at under 17, yeah. and then had some time with the professional football team as well.
Yeah,
that alongside something else I read was really interesting. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I've read that one thing that has perhaps benefited you in your commentary career in Argentina with ESPN is that your accent is quite neutral, which surprised me, because people from Maracaibo have quite a strong accent, and an accent yeah. that I particularly struggle to understand. Yet apparently your accent's quite neutral when you're commentating. Is that something that you've had to like train yourself to do, or something you gave thought, or do you just not have a strong regional accent?
A mix of things. I don't have the strong original accent of Maracaibo, because my family is not like a typical family from Maracaibo. My mother was born in Colón, Táchira. And I grew up with my stepfather. He's a Polonian Spanish guy, so has other culture, other way to communicate. And you know, I grew up in this, I don't know, in this ambience of not using this strong Maracucho accent, but I can speak Maracucho. When I have with people that I trust, my friends, my family, close friends, when we have confidence to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. But I grew up watching ESPN, Fox, Televisión Española, you know, channels from abroad, watching sports all the time. So it's like I imprinted myself with that kind of voices, that kind of tones, that kind of manner of do the sport commentary. I don't know if I get clear myself about this.
I understand. Yeah, I find that sometimes when I'm out in Caracas or somewhere else, it's quite rare, to be honest, that an adult will come up to me and hear that I'm English and start speaking to me. And most of the time I get misidentified as American, even though I'm clearly not American. But yeah. sometimes kids will...
In your case, it's obvious. Well, to me, it's obvious that you are from England, because your accent...
I think they're just probably more surprised that I'm from England than American, rather than thinking I sound American. They probably just hear English and think, oh, he must be from America. But sometimes I get kids come up to me, normally they're under the age of 11 or 12, and they speak like really, really well in English, but yeah. it's like TV English. They have like a Disney Channel accent. It's not an accent I recognize as from anywhere in particular. It's like a TV accent. So I think I get what you're saying when you say you're listening to the commentary growing up, and you perhaps developed a commentary voice. Like my nan, my grandmother, she has a telephone voice. Like if you ring her, and so she doesn't know who's ringing her, she answers first and she says like, hello. And then you're saying, hey, it's me. And then she's like, oh, okay, you're right. It's like a different accent for the
situation. Yeah. Yeah, but I think it's something similar, but I don't lie. Is it me? You know, it's not fake. I don't need to pretend. So that's the way I speak when I have a microphone in my hands and I'm working, I'm full focus on that. So I don't know if my accent is neutral at all, but I think it's like no one can tell if I am from Venezuela. But it's really strange, because last week I went to the supermarket to buy almond milk, you know, whatever. And the guy that was attending me asked me, where are you from? He was from Venezuela, I can tell. And I said to him, I am from Venezuela. Oh, I thought you were Spanish or Spaniard. And oh, no, no, not at all. So it happens to me every time, every day in my daily routine. I don't know why. I speak Venezuelan, I think, but I don't know. Maybe it's not the strong accent or the typical accent from Venezuela.
Yeah. And one thing I really like about Footvay, and I'm always keen to highlight for me the good things in Footvay or League of Footvay, because, you know, so often it comes under criticism. You know, a lot of the time it's valid. A lot of the time it can be unfair, but understandable, because there's just like sometimes just a negative. I think in Footvay, particularly Twitter as well, Twitter lends itself to it, but sometimes there's just like a negative cloud around Footvay. So I'm always keen to pick up the things I like. And one thing I really do like about League of Footvay is that normally for the TV broadcasts, the broadcasting team, the commentators, the analysts, the narradores are from that area. So if you're watching Zulia, you're listening to people from Zulia. If you're watching the Deportivo Táchira game, you're listening to people from San Cristobal, and so on and so forth. I really like that. Some people will criticize it and say, oh, every game you're listening to has got like a local bias. It's not nice to listen to. But I actually like it, because I think, you know, it brings, because in England, you don't get that. You've got like 10 or 15 famous commentators and they do every game, no matter what team are playing. You know, it's a BT or a Sky game, you're going to get the same commentators. If it's FA Cup game on the BBC, you're going to get two of the same six commentators, no matter where it is in the country. So I really like the fact that League of Footvay has that local element to games, because I think it also brings, you know, more local knowledge, which I'm obviously trying to absorb constantly. And that is how you got your start. Like you said earlier, you started commentating on Zulia games, but radio or journalism, it seems it was your second life in football. Your first life in football was as a player, firstly in the futsal team in Zulia, and then in the you know, football team, the professional football team. What was your experiences like as a player growing up in Zulia with futsal and football? Because I've read that you weren't a football fan because you inherited a love for football from family.
Yeah, but first of all, I wanna tell you something about this. Local commentators, for me that was very important, because it allowed me to introduce myself in the world of commentating national TV. You know, it's not bad for me here listening to people that are from the cities or the states that belongs to the team, so they can create a like the whole picture about the team, because they know the teams and they can be professional and prepare the other team as well. So at least that was what I did, no, when was my turn. And then talking about my experience as a player, at the beginning was pure passion, was a hobby. At the beginning, I started practicing tennis. I wanted to be like Martina Hingis. I wanted to be like King Kleister, Justine Henin, or the tennis player at that time. And I played tennis from 12 to 15, but my true passion was football. I love sports since I remember. When I went to this practice, in tennis, when the practice was over, I always look for a football, for a ball, okay, to play with one of my teammates in the tennis club. And the trainer always told me, what are you doing playing football? You just finish a 3-hour practice of tennis, you are gonna get injured, you're gonna get tired, you have a tournament tomorrow, so you need to be focused, you need to be responsible. And I was just thinking, I love football, I want to play football, but I didn't know at the time that there were women's team in my city or women's team around my neighbor. It's like I wasn't in that circle, you know.
Yeah.
It was so difficult to be part of a women's football team. I talking about mid-2000s, the first decade, or approaching 2010. And then in 2008, I played this under 17 national. Then I played for my school in futsal. And then, so two trainers, two coach, saw me play. They realized that I had so skills, so many skills, and I was good at that. They invited me to be part of Zulia Football Club, and was like a dream come true for me, because I thought, oh, finally, thanks God, there is a team, and I can live in this dream of playing football, you know. But that was, for me, pure passion. I knew at the time that I wasn't going able to do that for the rest of my life. So I focused myself to study, to get my degree, to work as well, because I was studying and working at the same time. And in the rest of the time, I was practicing soccer. Then I got injured in my left knee. And then I quit. I was like 22. At that time, 22, 23. So I play football, 11 football in a pitch, you know, like for 5 years, plus the futsal, all my childhood and adolescence, and the 5 or 4 years I practiced tennis. So I play as well racquetball. I don't know if you if you know the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very common in US, but I don't know if it is common in England.
No, it's less common in England, but like there's racquetball, paddleball, now there's
pickleball. It's like ball, yeah. So to resume this, it's like I'm a sporty girl. I have always been. So my experience with Zulia was very brief, but very rich for me. Mm-hmm. Of course, being part of that allowed me to know more about the game, you know, to be in the pitch.
I picked up that you said, like, you knew that at a young age that it wasn't going to be like a career or a life.
No.
Presumably because of the money or the lack of money.
Yeah, yeah.
Football salaries. So it was interesting. I saw last week, I can't remember which account had done it, a fairly big account had put out a map of South America, and I think the Americas as well, but detailing like the minimum wage that each female footballer would have to be paid monthly across South America. And I saw Venezuela and I saw it said $250 a month, and I just thought, that's so not true. That's not what I've heard from players themselves over the past 2 years. Like one of the best players in Venezuela in 2020 and 2021, Rafany Mendoza, a centre back that won the league with Atletico, played in Copa Libertadores, has now left, and she's playing football in Malta in Europe. Over the course of a year in which she won the league title, was voted player of the tournament and played Copa Libertadores, she told me the sum total of her earnings from football that whole year was $15. And then we see this map that says the minimum wage of $250. And then I read a couple of days later that is going to be the new minimum wage from this season onwards, that at least five players per team in the Liga Football Femenino from the 2022 season onwards must be paid at least $250 a month. We've had 2 years without proper women's football in Venezuela. We've had the short tournaments that have been only participated in by a handful of teams for Copa Libertadores qualification. This year should, in theory, next week, mark the return of a proper league structure, albeit in a two-group format. What what are your hopes for this year in Venezuelan football in the league? And where do you think the game is standing at the moment right now on the women's side in Venezuela? What state is it in?
This is a complicated thing to talk about because women's football is like, touch me very profound myself. And it worries me about the situation in Venezuela. I just want to believe that this is going to be a new beginning. I don't want to believe that with the month running, there's going to be another problems. They're going to be the same situation that we've been through before. When I was a soccer player, I remember, like you are saying, the minimum wage, we got paid like in that time, at that time, like, I don't know, a minimum amount of money that was useful for move yourself around the city to go to practice. Yeah. That's all, not for living at all. So
it was more like expenses than a wage.
Yeah, that expensive. So five players for in each team, in every team, earning $215. Not enough. That is not enough for me. That is not enough. And I know the teams are struggling very hard to participate in the tournament, and the Federation of Venezuelan Football are doing the efforts. I applaud that, but I think it's not enough. Yeah. We need to build a stronger structure to maintain this for the years to come. And that's why we created that in Mundo Pelota, that timeline, talking about the salaries around the world, but mostly around South America, because it's like, oh my God, this can't be possible.
It was your account that made the map.
Yeah, Mundo Pelota is...
I'm referencing your work. I need to say it's your work.
Yeah. You can follow Mundo Pelota, please. That is my project. That is my project since I was a teenager. Uh-huh. But nowadays we are like making this account stronger. And we focus only on women's football because I decided to do it because women's football need these spaces specifically focus or aim to promote this discipline. It's the same football, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens with this tournament, but I don't know. I hope this can be a new beginning, but let's see. It's like see to believe, you know. I don't know if you have a idiomatic expression in England to say
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I believe it when I see it. But of course, I'm happy that we are gonna enjoy our talent, enjoy this league, and for those players that have been without playing football properly for 2 or 3 years. Oh my God, that is awful for me. Awful.
Mm-hmm. And to circle back to your commentary career and how it's gone since you've been in Argentina, one thing that I found very interesting is your first breaking commentary came through English. It wasn't Spanish language commentary, it was English language commentary.
Yeah. Was difficult. The
Buenos Aires Youth Olympic Games. And then with Media Pro for the Libertadores and Sudamericana.
Yeah.
And we so often hear or see in the conversation on Venezuelan football how important it is for English, for Venezuelan players to leave Venezuela prepared and having some level of English. And people point towards Dani Perez in recent times of how his move to Club Brugge, you know, almost hinging on his English competency. He tells the story that halfway through his interview,
He speaks so well.
Yeah, halfway through his interviews with the general manager of Club Bruges, it was in Spanish, and suddenly the interviewer just switched to English to see how Danny would react. And Danny being able to carry on in English was, you know, one thing that turned the tide for him to get that move to Club Bruges. And I saw that your preparation for English wasn't too far before you went to Argentina, only maybe a year or two. I read that you did English language lessons in preparation to leave the country. Why did you make that decision? If you were moving to somewhere else in South America, why did you think it would be important to have English fluency?
No, because English, like any other languages, open gates for you in professional path, in life, for whatever you want to do. Knowing English, the universal language, is like an important tool, you know. But in Venezuela, I think our parents in our generation always encourage us to learn how to speak English. So since I was a child, I was in contact with the language through the movies, through the music. I really love rock and English rock bands, indie rock band, all that stuff.
It's so popular, you know, in Venezuela. Like, I know so many people that ask me about English rock bands, and I'm like,
yeah, I love it. I love them. But Coldplay is not so rock, but I love Coldplay. I love Arctic Monkeys. I love the Kooks. All that kind of, and Keen, but I think Keen is from, is Irish? Irish group?
I think the band is
Irish. No, or Ireland.
You two are English, despite Roy Keane and Robbie Keane.
Yeah, so I love that kind of musical genre. So I grew up with that cultural mixture around me. So I got my ears used to the language. Then, obviously, I took a course in Berlitz Institute. I don't know if you know this institute. And it's like I learned from that the structure, the grammar, and all that stuff. But nowadays, how I said to you before, I've been without speaking like 3 years, so I feel like, oh, I'm blocked right now. Sorry.
It's far better than I could produce in Spanish, so it's very good.
Okay. I need to practice, so we can talk each other more often, please.
So you'll teach me maracucho, and I'll teach you.
Okay. And I said to you, ¿qué te pasa, mijo?
I'm only like 3 or 4 years younger than you, but.
you know how to say vergación.
Yeah. But one of my best friends in Venezuela, a guy called Fernando Prieto, he's a big Zulu fan.
Okay.
He came to Caracas a couple months ago for the first time I've met him in the flesh after being friends for 3 or 4 years. And some like verb forms he uses because he's from Zulia, I just like, wow, I've not heard those verb forms since I was like 14 and I was studying Spanish GCSE. Because there are quite a few. I think Venezuelan Spanish like simplifies the Spanish that I learned at school for like Spain Spanish in a logical way. I think Venezuelan Spanish, the way it's constructed, makes more sense to me than Spanish Spanish. But even Fernando was using like vos and tendrais, and I was like, what are you?
¿Cómo estáis? ¿Cómo estáis vos? ¿Todo bien? Sí, machete. No, Zulia is like, welcome to the jungle. Everything is different.
I remember when I was like researching Zulia for my book when I was writing it a couple of years ago, and like learning about how it's got like this strong history of like independence or a desire to be independent, that really fascinated me, and like Zulia in general fascinates me, but I do really struggle with the accent sometimes, particularly I don't know why, but particularly I find the women from Zulia more difficult than the men. I don't know if it's the pace or
the accent.
Yeah, the accent. I don't know if it's a mixture of the accent and the speed at which, like some people think, I really struggle. And then, for she's not from Zulia, but Yeliane Moreno, the player.
La Pantera.
She's from Guasdualito. And yeah, I don't understand a word she says. So difficult.
Maybe she speaks so fast. Yeah,
no, if anything, it's so slow, but I can never tell where one word ends and the next one begins.
It's like everything is linked.
Yeah, like... and it's sort of, it reminds me of, I don't know if you've ever listened to like Fetty Wap or some of like the trap rappers where they like, it's really slow and they almost sound drunk. And I just, yeah, I the Guazio Lito accent so far, I can't.
You got lost.
Very lost. I'm worried that we've only got under 60 seconds to go. So in those 60 seconds, could you give us a quick prediction of the last two rounds of Copa Libertadores for Táchira and Caracas? You've been commentating, you've been watching. Are they going to qualify? Are they going to finish third? Are they going to finish bottom? Go.
Oh, this is very difficult. I don't want to hurt any susceptibility or Caracas and Táchira fan, but I think Táchira lost a huge opportunity to clinch that spot that can make them through the last 16, you know. But they have chances. They have still chances. And Caracas need to beat the strongest, no matter what cost, cueste lo que cueste. They need to beat the Bolivian side. So Táchira right now depends on what Emelec can produce in the last two fixtures, you know? And Caracas, I think, depends on itself. So they play against the strongest next Tuesday, and then they close their participation against Paranaense. This Paranaense is not the same that won the Copa Conmebol Sudamericana. So I think Caracas is slightly better positioned right now than Táchira. I'm going to give Caracas a 60% of going through last 16. I'm going to give Táchira 40% of probabilities.
Uh-huh.
Nowadays, okay? Uh-huh. Remember Táchira in the last fixture play against Palmeiras. That is the monster nowadays of South American football.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the Sudamericana, well, hope for La Guaira and Metropolitanos is already over. Difficult when only one team qualifies from the group anyway in Sudamericana. Yeah. But I'm hoping Metropolitanos can at least get a win in their last two games, because it's not like they haven't played well. For me, like, their performances have been better than the results. La Guaira, to be honest with you, I have been disappointed in La Guaira. And it's hard to really put a finger on why, because I thought they were going to struggle because of the element of rotation, but they haven't really rotated. You know, Arles Flores, for example, played 8 games in April, and he's their oldest outfield player. But in Copa Libertadores, it's now looking increasingly unlikely that we'll have a Venezuelan player, let alone a team, in towards the end, with Savarino now back in MLS. So our hope for a Venezuelan representative in the final probably lands on your shoulders, Geraldine. Are you hoping to be the commentator for the final this year? Focus on you.
Maybe on Facebook Watch. I don't know if in ESPN, because if Venezuelan teams can go through the last 16, it's going to be difficult for me, but it doesn't matter. I'm always hoping to can represent my country in the last stages. So I just really want to Caracas or Táchira going to the last 16, because there is something that we as a country can achieve since 2016 with Táchira. Mm-hmm. And Zulia went through Copa Conmebol Sudamericana in 2019, and they went until last 8 against Colón. I don't know if you remember, but yeah, that was a splendid campaign with Francesco Stefano.
And Brujo Martinez, who's now doing so well.
Yeah, Brujo Martinez.
Every MLS's team reference point for a defensive midfielder is Brujo Martinez. It it was really nice to see in January.
He's a warrior.
See a team, an MLS's team's like transfer wish list and their requirements. And they, any team that wants a defensive midfielder, it says ideal profile, Jose Bruja Martinez. And I'm like,
yeah, you know, he's one of a kind. And he has like 4 or 5 loans. I don't know. He's tireless.
Tireless. Another good thing about him is it proves that you don't need to leave Liga Futebol by the age of 22 or 23 to have a career outside. Like, you know, he was already 25 or 26. Like,
yeah.
Often you hear, if that player has the ability to play outside of Venezuela, why is he still there when he's 25 or 26? Well, for me, Brujo proves that you can be that age and still then move out and do well.
With more maturity, you know?
Yeah.
Other stage of mind, state of mind. And I think when you are good, it doesn't matter the age. Doesn't matter the age, the DNA, your birthday or something. Now let's see what happened with Savarino. I was sad when I heard the news that he was leaving Brazil. I think he did a great job there, but
yeah.
Then he was he had no luck. When he went to Venezuela against Paraguay, he got injured. Then he missed the semifinal in the last Copa Libertadores, and then he struggled, fight back so hard to get his position in the team back, but he could. And then Cuca left the team, and there's a new coach that maybe doesn't trust on him. And let's see what happened with Savarino. He's a great player. I know him very well because I was at Zulia when he was the key player. So I saw him in every training. He was an unbelievable player. He's so smart.
And like, if I sort of away from the on-field happenings, he is now with Kia, one of the biggest agents in world football. I'm not going to try and pronounce his surname, but he's an Iranian guy. He took Mascherano and Tevez from South America to England when they were young, direct. So, you know, he is now off the field, has an agent, you know, more than capable of taking him to Europe off of the back of, you know, a good season MLS. So let's just hope that that's what can happen from here.
I think he deserves. I don't know if the passport has something to do, but I think he deserves to fulfill his dream. I know his dream is playing in Europe.
Yeah, yeah. And for me, he definitely has. He has the ability. I think he's probably my favorite player is Soteldo, and always will be.
I know. And you want Soteldo going to Southampton? I know.
Oh yeah. I don't know. I'm not fussy. I just want to Venezuelan at Southampton.
You can die when that happens. You can die happily.
Yeah.
My God.
I'll probably move back to Southampton, ironically.
The new Leticia, Soteldo.
Players, but Soteldo, I love. Like, maybe, you know, if I can go to Mexico and watch him, I will. Like, I to see him score a Panenka, that was my first Venezuela game as well. My first Venezuela game live in El Olimpico, which, like, you know, Caracas is now my home city. To see him
against Argentina.
To score, yeah, the Panenka against
First ever
Venezuela game live. And, you know, obviously never want to lose a game, but to see, you know, my Venezuelan hero, if you like, score a Panenka, it made my night.
Yeah, you know, when I was in Venezuela, I'm making this longer than established. But when I was in Venezuela, I could see Soteldo every week, and he was fantastic. He was like no other player in the dribbling, in the one-to-one. He's so fast. He's so he has so many creativity. I haven't seen a player like him in Venezuela. Maybe nowadays I can tell you Gerson Ronaldo Chacon is aiming high, you know.
Yeah.
But Soteldo is pure magic.
Yeah, one of a kind. There's not like a comparable player right now, I don't think. But Geraldine, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
And good luck for the rest of the season and just your career in general. Really is lovely to have you on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jordan. I hope you keep continue the good work, and maybe we can repeat this conversation in the future. Maybe I'm going to be more fluent with my English. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.